Welcome to the Reach the Stars podcast, a collection of conversations with cool people who do cool things. Each episode will bring you inspiring stories of persistence, passion, and purpose. With your host, founder of Papercraft Miracles, Jonna Willoughby-Lohr.
Welcome to the Reach the Stars podcast, everybody. I am your host, Jonna Willoughby-Lohr, and today I have my guest, Mason Aksamit, and he is, can tell you a little bit more about who he is and where he comes from. Welcome to the show, Mason.
Well, thank you, Jonna. So I am a filmmaker. I'm currently working on a documentary about the student debt crisis. I am from Colorado originally, but actor, filmmaker, writer. But when I was 19, I tested out of my bachelor's degree. So I used CLEP and DSST exams, which are basically easy multiple choice AP exams to test out of 3 years of my bachelor's degree. So I got my bachelor's degree in 1 year for about $10,000. And since then, I've been coaching people on how to do the same and how they can help get them through their degree. I coach 15 people. Save them about $1.2 million on total in their degree. And considering the student debt crisis is now at $1.8 trillion, and that's just going up and up and up every single day, I wanted to make a documentary to get the word out on a mass scale to help anybody test through their degree so they don't have to graduate with being $30,000 to $100,000 in debt.
That is amazing. Okay. Thank you. I just have to say, for everyone who's listening out there, the point of this show in the first place was to highlight so many amazing people who are doing things that are changing the world in big ways and small ways. And I started doing this show by interviewing people that I know personally because of all these great people who are doing cool stuff, who are getting no press about it. And since the show has grown, I've now started interviewing people that I don't actually know in person. And I heard about Mason and I was like, this is dope. Like, we need to tell people that this is possible. And I'm not sure how old you are, but I just turned 40. I know I don't look it. But I'm in that little couple of year range of the Xennial, like not quite millennial, but before millennial. And like my husband and I are pretty much the only people that we know who don't have student debt anymore, who have actually managed to pay it off. But even like my brother is 4 years younger than me. And by the time it was his generation, he's born in 86. And between like 86 and beyond, like the amount of student debt is just ridiculous. I mean, I went crazy getting every single scholarship I could think of and grant that I could apply for when I was in school, because I was broke as hell and I was like, I can't be taking on all this debt. But it's just not possible to do that anymore, and I think what you're doing is genius.
And that's the thing, is it is possible, which is cool, because I'm only 25. So there's a lot of people I've been able to just talk to about this, and literally they're super super easy tests, and you can study for them for free online now. Like the modern day has given us access to learn any subject just by being online in general. There's so many sites that offer college professors giving free lectures and different things like that. So it's very possible to test out of your degree for honestly under $10,000 in the modern day.
That is amazing. So obviously not wanting to be in student debt was your main motivator for this, but how did you go about trying to say, I don't want to be in student debt, how do I do that? Like, how did you figure out about taking these tests? Did you like learn about it from somebody else, or how'd you do that?
So my high school teacher, he was my SAT teacher. So he was prepping us for college, and he told me about CLEP exams. So college level examination program is what it stands for. And he said that he tested out of a year of college. And when he said that, I was like, what? No way. And he said, they're way easier than AP exams. And I started doing research on it. Eventually I figured out there's multiple colleges that you can go to where you can transfer 3 years worth of credits up to a full 4 years worth of credits to test out of your whole degree. So which would be 90 credit hours or 120 credit hours, depending on where you go. But there's multiple schools that do that. So I was like, okay, so why not just dive in and just test out of as many as possible? And I found a study site that I really liked, and I would just watch video courses on psychology 101. So I'd watch 100 videos on psychology and then go take the test and then pass and then move on. And I just did that for a bunch of subjects. I ended up testing out of, it was 78 credit hours by the end of it. And so the rest of it, I just did through my school that I was at.
That's awesome. So when I was in high school, I went to a technical high school here in Buffalo, and it was the only high school around where you pick a major as a freshman. So I actually majored in biochemical technology in high school. And so I got to do all of these different science classes. So by the time I was a senior, I'd taken biology, chemistry, physics, organic chemistry with a lab, AP Chem, AP Bio, like all of these science courses. And I took AP Government as well my senior year. So I took three AP exams. They were hard as hell. I'm not good at taking tests, but I managed to pass both of the chemistry and the biology tests. So when I went to college, I was like, oh, sweet, I have credits. I don't have to take a college level science class. And the fact that you figured out how to like do that before you even, you know, taking any college courses is pretty amazing.
So I took four AP exams and I failed all of them. I didn't pass any of them, but with CLEP exams, I passed 88% of the time. They're that much easier because, again, all multiple choice, and they're, you only need a 70% to pass. Whereas AP, you have like the DBQs and you have all the essays that you got to fill out. You don't have to do any of that for CLEP or DSST.
That's awesome. Yeah. I got a two out of five on the government exam, but I was just like, honestly, I had like crazy stoner brain and I was like, you want me to remember history dates? That's not happening. Sorry. Like, it's just so weird. We live in this world. They're like, oh, you'll never have to look like know those off the top of your head, like ever again. Like when I was in high school, yes, there was internet, but like it was all dial up when I was in high school. So it's just weird to be like, oh yeah, that's not a thing anymore. Like there was no Google when I was in high school. It didn't exist. Yeah, it's very cool being born when I was born, because like my childhood, there was no internet. But when I went to college, there was. So I was kind of like, and there was no smartphones or social media or any of that when I did go to college. So I had a really different college experience than even, you know, anybody a couple years younger than me. And it's been a really interesting experience, like having kids who are born now. Like my son is 7 years old, my oldest son. And he said to me the one day, I had told him about when I was a kid and how there weren't as many pictures of me and his dad from when we were little, because you had to buy film and then pay to develop it at the store. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you had to pay to take pictures? That's so stupid. Because his whole world is like iPads and smartphones, and you know, it's just not a thing. Like you could take as many, you know, thousands and thousands of pictures every day if you want to. And it must be the same thing. Like now that you're a filmmaker, and it's so much easier to get into the field of filmmaking in this digital era, where you can get a sweet phone in your pocket that can take, you know, better video than you could take on anything in the 90s.
My iPhone takes video footage than a lot of the cameras that my film school did.
Yeah,
which is what. It takes the higher quality pixelation, which is just nuts, because it can shoot in 6K, which most Hollywood films are shot in 4K, which that is how many pixels are on the screen.
Yeah. It is amazing, because I had wanted to start a podcast for a really long time. And I always thought that I would need all this fancy equipment and fancy cameras and fancy microphones. And then the pandemic happened. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to get whatever I can get. And it already has better video quality than like most things that were out, like, you know, even 5 years ago. It's crazy. So tell me more about the other films that you've made, and like, why did you get into filmmaking? Like, what drives you about that? What do you love it?
So I've made a couple TV pilots. One is called The Shivering Tale, which is adapted from Grimm's fairy tales. It was basically it's just like one of those one-off fairy tales, turned it into a Monty Python-esque comedy. That's been doing really well in film festivals, specifically outside of the US. For some reason, it just won a film festival in Rio, in Bulgaria, in the Ukraine, and Italy. So that's done well. One of my feature scripts, The Fool, which is a tragedy, that has done really well at festivals just for the script itself, because I don't have the money to actually make the full movie yet. but that's done pretty well. And then another show called The World's Greatest Cooking Show, which is about, it's kind of filmed like American Idol, but for cooking shows. So each contestant comes on and they're trying to pitch their cooking show to the eating network is what I call it. And all of the contestants have emotional instability and emotional problems. So they have emotional breakdowns while they're making food, which is just fun. And so that did well at a festival in New York called the Big Apple Agents and Managers Film Festival. And so certain films go pretty well, but I wanted to make a little bit of a transition and do this documentary just because I thought it would be an easier way to get a lot more information out to a lot of people versus just a one-off episode from a low budget filmmaker who doesn't have a lot of money behind him. Mm-hmm. So, but I got into filmmaking because I've been in acting writing now for 13 years. So I've been in theater and in different things, and I just love comedy. So I like telling jokes and playing different characters and stuff like that. So that's what I do.
Awesome. I love when people are like, I have this creative outlet that I love doing, and how can I incorporate that into my professional life? And because that's definitely my MO. I mean, I was was always making stuff as a kid and writing poetry and stuff like that. And I was like, how can I do that for the rest of my life? And when I went to college, I only tested out of like just science. But the college I went to was really a cool place. And they had these integrative studies majors where you could like make up your own major and choose all the classes you wanted to take for all 4 years and just like design your whole thing. And it wasn't easy, obviously, but, when I went to college, I was like, look, I want to be an artist. I want to use my creativity and I don't want to be broke. How do I do that? Mm-hmm. And they're like, I don't know either. Why don't you figure it out? So I ended up making up my own major, and I spent 4 years trying to figure out how to make money with art. And I started my company, not officially, but came up with the name and built a janky website way back in the day. Mm-hmm. All done like for free with my college major. And when I graduated at 22 years old, I was like, hey, I own a company. What's up?
Yeah.
and you know, just so many creative people I know spend so many years in college and so many years in training, learning how to do the creative part of the craft. And nobody ever teaches them how to apply it to real life and how to make money and how to do that as your job. And, you know, most people go to college, get out of college, have shit tons of debt, have no clue how to support themselves doing something that makes them happy. And then they get a job working at fucking Starbucks and struggle blessing forever to get health insurance and whatever. And like, that's their life. And they try to find spare time to do the things that they love and that fulfill them. And I just think it's awesome that you're like, you know what? I'm not going to do any of that.
I still have to do it a little bit just to make a little bit of side money while I do this, but this is still what's driving me. Cause once I turn this into a flow of income where I can live off of it, then I'll absolutely stick with that. But for now it's like a hobby / moneymaker, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It does both.
Yeah.
But supplemental income as well.
Yeah. I mean, mine definitely, I didn't, you know, quit my jobby job until after I had kids and I was like in my early 30s. And I didn't even get to, you know, give it my whole focus because I had another full-time job at that point. But I just know so many creatives who are like, I love art. I know nothing about money. Like nothing at all, you know, like you can't even, you know, balance a checkbook or, you know, I know that most people don't actually balance a checkbook anymore. I do, but it's because I'm 40. So I'm curious, like when you were a little kid, like really little, when did you first decide, like, I love acting, or when did you get into it? Like, how did that happen? So
started acting when I was 12, just doing like kid theater stuff through local theater programs. And then when I was 16, I played the lead in a show called Charlie's Aunt, which the premise of it is takes place in the 1890s. And it's about these two guys who are trying to propose to these two girls, but they need a chaperone because of the time period. So their chaperone cancels at the last minute. So they dress their guy friend up like an old lady and have him be the chaperone. So I played the old lady in that, and that ended up doing really well. It won. Basically, it was like I got to perform in front of a very large audience. It was like the best in the state for comedy. So I performed that in front of 5,000 people, and I kind of just got addicted to that feeling of being a comedian on stage, if that makes sense, and just making people laugh. And that feeling is what's driven me for the rest of my life, to be honest.
Oh, I love that. I love that. It's actually, it's really similar when I was 12 is when I started doing performing poetry in public. And my mom made me do it, even though I was freaking terrified and had no friends and was super dorky. And at that first open mic, I was like, here's this poem I wrote about being lonely as crap as a 12-year-old. And all the adults that were in the audience, because, you know, there weren't like kids open mics in the 90s. And all the people in the audience started clapping. And I was like, oh, shit, like that feels real good. Like, that's really nice. And I definitely started to get hooked on like that feeling. And I remember, you know, being super nervous about going on stage. And my mom was like, the only difference between nervousness and excitement is fear.
Mm.
And ever since then, whenever I have the opportunity to go on a stage and, you know, flaunt my skills, right? I go out and I'm like, I am so fucking excited to be out here right now. Like, yes, like pumped up as well. And it just changes the way that you still get that, you know, nervous energy, right? But it changes the way that feels. Cause it's not nervous anymore. It's just like, it's like the buildup, like it's that excitement and it's so much more energy to put out there. And then you get it back like tenfold from all the people that you give it to. And you're so right. Like that feeling it's addictive.
It's very addictive.
I love it. I love it. Performing is like my jam.
Yeah. Do you still do poetry?
I do. I do still do poetry. And I've been playing with my band, Bloodthirsty Vegans, since 2008. We don't play as much as we used to because most of us are all like old and have kids. And it's not nearly as easy to like go out and play a show at a bar when you have a bunch of little kids. Especially like we play original music. And so going out to play at a bar where you're going to make enough money to pay all the people in the band enough to cover the babysitters that you're paying at home to watch your kids. It's tricky. So we tend to do a lot of kind of public shows and things where the kids can come to, and we play like shows on porches and whatnot, because that's just what's available. Because my husband's in our band too. So when we go play a show, we definitely need a babysitter even just to do practice, because we're both in it. But yeah, I just love it. I love performing and being on the stage and,
thrilling. It's fun.
It is so fun. It is so fun. And it's one of those things that for me anyway, that's like me connecting with whatever higher power is out there. You know, like, do I believe there's a dude in robes in the sky? Probably not. But when I'm on a stage, I like channel energy from somewhere else. And I mean, I have written these poems that are like 9 pages long and I don't even have to look at them anymore. It's just like, I can think about other things like while it's happening. And I know like with for actors, like once you are like in the script and you know the script and you live the script, you don't think about what your next line is. It just, you are that. And when I'm up performing, like that's the same thing. It's just like, I am the song. And when I lock into that first line, there it is. And I'm in it. And it's the same way. I just love it. And so, yeah, pandemic sucked. It made it really hard to be a performer. And I've had a lot of people say like, what do you do for self-care? I'm like, I go to open mics virtually with complete strangers and like bare my soul to people who don't know me at all. Like, that's what I do, because, you know, during the pandemic, it's like, what are you going to do? You can't go play a show. You can't go, you know, perform anywhere. So I started doing this show because I was going insane.
Gives you a little bit of a run.
I was like, I need to connect with people. I'm super extroverted, if that's not very evident.
Really?
Just a little bit. right? Do you ever do the Enneagram test?
The what?
The Enneagram.
That, like, the ENTJ, INFP.
It's like test. That, but they're all numbers. And each personality type has a different number. And each number has different traits. Like when you're really healthy and in that trait in a good way, these are things that how you would react to people and how you behave. And when you're not in a healthy place, here's ways that you would react and how you would behave. And it's really interesting. It was very eye-opening for me to do it. Do this little quiz. I have this book. I'm totally going to plug this book. I think everyone should get this book. The Wisdom of the Enneagram. And just do the quizzes in it and try and see like what personality type fits you the best. Cause some people are like right on the border and they're like some of this. But of the Enneagrams, I'm a 7, which is called the enthusiast. And typically that behavior type, personality type, is always on the lookout for new experiences, new exciting things, anything to avoid fear, pain, and loss. You know, it's just like if things are going bad, they're like, no, let's start something new. And during the pandemic, it was really apparent that like I was struggling because I was way too overbooked in general. And instead of taking a step back and being like, I need to do less, I was like, no, I need to take on even more new fun and exciting things to avoid the fact that the world sucks real bad. and learning that was the way that I was behaving when I was like not doing well, I was like, wow, that's eye-opening for me. So I notice it more when I'm starting to be like, oh yay, all the new fun, exciting things. I'm like, what's not working out right now that I'm avoiding, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I don't want to talk too long because I know you have to go in a little bit. So at the end of all the episodes, we do five question time. So the first question is, tell me about a single moment or one experience in your life that changed who you are today.
Ooh, the experience I told you about with theater, I think that performing in front of 5,000 people, there's no rush like it. Like I performed in front of 500 before that and 1,000 and it's not the same, but like when 5,000 people are like screaming, when you bow, it's like, whoa, that's it. It sends like a different rush throughout all of you. So I would say that, cause that was what got me hooked on, I have to be acting. I have to be doing film or something for forever.
That's awesome. Do you act in most of the films that you make?
Yep. I act in pretty much all of them, I would say.
So you're like directing it and then like setting it up and filming yourself? Or do you like have people working with you?
Crew behind the camera, setting up different camera shots and different techniques and stuff like that. It's sometimes it can be hard to balance the directorial side with the acting side because you can't really focus on one. So in more recent things, I've been trying to like divulge the directing side of things to somebody else when I write something and then I can act in it. Or if I feel like directing, then I'll direct and let other people act. It just depends.
Cool. That's so awesome. I love it. number two, when you feel defeated or overcome, what do you tell yourself to keep going?
Typically I just go to the gym. I'll just go and like work out for a bit just so I can like vent my emotions, or my dad owns a martial arts school. So sometimes I'll just go there and punch the heavy bag because I don't know. I just get it out and then wake up the next day and try to move on.
Awesome. Everyone has like really different answers to that question, which is super, super interesting. That's why I like doing the same questions, because you know, I've done 50 something episodes so far and nobody's ever had the same answer to any of these questions. And it's so cool to see how different people just have all these different tips and ways that they deal with struggle and whatnot. And I think it helps a lot of people to listen to this part of the show and be like, oh, I never thought about doing that, you know, or yeah. It's really cool. So number three, tell me about a way that you overcame a failure or a mistake and what you learned from it.
So I think the thing I learned about mistakes kind of recently is that a lot of times I think you self-define your mistakes as like, oh, this, I messed up here. I did this wrong. So I, with the Shivering Tale I talked about earlier, that's the Grimm fairy tale adaptation. When I first made it, the very first person I showed it to said it was like, I bit off more than I could chew, chewed it up, digested it, and this is what I pooped out. And that comment made me not show anybody else. Like, I kept it on my hard drive. I didn't share it with people. And when my friend was like, just send it, who cares? Send it everywhere. It ends up winning all these awards. It gets first place in film festivals and different things like that. But I thought it was a major mistake. But like, looking back at the film, it's definitely not like the greatest piece of art of all time. It was good for what it was, because I had no budget and I just put it on what I had, which was just $4,000 on a credit card. I just made this film. But for what it was, it turned out good for that level. And it's still a mistake, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So sometimes just embracing what the flaws are does really well.
I love that. I love that. I got interviewed for Medium when was it, a year and a half ago, something like that. And it was all about being a creative and how do you deal with naysayers or like people who will try to, you know, knock what you're doing instead of support you. And It's so wild how there's so many creatives out there who have all these amazing ideas and they told one person who sucked. And that person was like, that's stupid. You shouldn't do that. And then they don't do it. And it's like, you know, it was this whole interview just all about like, you know, haters going to hate. There's always going to be more people who find a reason why you shouldn't do something because they're afraid to do something themselves.
Most critics have no talent whatsoever. It's like people who are film critics literally don't even make movies. They just go and crap on them. So it's like that. That's their whole motivation. That's the whole reason they do anything. Honestly, it just shows more insecurity on their part than anything. But what I've come to discover a lot of times is if somebody has a genuine criticism, they'll give you compliments and then they'll point out a specific flaw that they think you can work on, which always feels uplifting. It's like, oh yeah, I can fix that. That's an easy fix. Mm-hmm. Whereas somebody who just wants to bash your work will only find the problems with it. And they'll point out, like, they won't even be specific a lot of times. They'll just go, it's boring, I don't like it. They'll say generic things about stuff that doesn't make any sense because they don't know anything about the craft themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's with my business in general, like, we do handmade paper art of all kinds. And there's so many people who will either say, oh, I could have made that if I knew how to make that. Right. Of course. They're like, I could have done that myself. I'm like, then, you know, power to you, do it, go for it. But then there's other people who are like, how much does it cost? What? And I'm like, yeah, you know, they'll say, oh, I could get a paper, like we make paper flowers that look hella real. And people are like, oh, I could buy, you know, a flower arrangement at Michael's for $40 and it looks like this. I'm like, yeah, you know, those flowers are made by machines in the Philippines, just so you're aware. You know, like, these are made by hand. We cut all these petals one at a time with a pair of scissors. And they're like, wait, what? And I think a lot of times people's kind of naysaying about projects, especially like filmmaking, which takes forever to do, that people are like, eh, I could have done that, or I would have changed this, or I would have done that. And, but they don't even bother to make anything for themselves. So I'm really glad that you put it out there anyway, despite somebody knocking it. And you were like, oh, in your face.
You know, like, so that's actually like a big thing, because a lot of these film companies have money behind them too. So I think everybody just assumes like, oh, they have millions of dollars. Why didn't they do this instead? Why didn't they do this instead? Where I've noticed this just the more I've worked on the film industry, a lot of people who make films don't have the money and they're just putting together what they can put together. Like Napoleon Dynamite, for being a classic like it was, it literally had John Heder made $1,000 for the whole film. Like he didn't get paid much at all. The whole budget, I think, was like a few hundred thousand, which is a high budget for somebody with no money. But that blew up to the next level with very little. So that's actually, I mean, why I came on here in the first place is I've been promoting this documentary. I have an Indiegogo that I'm trying to get crowdfunding for. So if anybody's willing to donate even a dollar, it would help so, so much just being able to put things together and send it off to film festivals, because it costs $50 per film festival I send it off to. So the more money I can put together, the better I can do.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll definitely have the link for that in the show notes. Okay, before we run out of even more time, story of my life. Number four, what's one trait or habit that keeps you on track?
Doing something every day. Kind of just have to make the rule for myself of just, even if it's doing it for 10 minutes, that's better than doing absolutely nothing for 10 minutes. Just every day, a little bit of work, just chipping away piece by piece by piece is way better than trying to like go, oh, I'm not in the mood right now, I'm going to save it for tomorrow. And then I'm going to save it for tomorrow. And you just keep telling yourself you're going to save it for tomorrow, where you could have just done a little bit today.
Man, I try to keep a list of stuff that, that will only take like 10, 15 minutes. So when I'm like, oh, I have a meeting in a little bit, and I know that if I get into doing something, it's going to take way longer, I'm going to forget and not do it. Cause you know, I have ADHD and I did that yesterday actually. But I try to keep this list. So if I'm like, oh, I got a little bit of time, what can I do in this little bit of time? Then at least I can open that list and say, I could do one of these things instead of just sitting here, you know, waiting for the next appointment to show up when I'm like, oh, I don't have enough time to do anything. And it really does help, you know, like doing a little bit of that, like even one little thing. Then you're like, ooh, when you get that like nice little dopamine hit from crossing it off the list, it's great. Okay, number five. What's the best piece of advice you've ever gotten? And what advice would you give other people?
Best piece of advice I've ever gotten. To find things to appreciate in the present moment whenever you're feeling any sense of doubt or insecurity or pain. I've found just in my personal life, and I mean, I'm a teacher, and there's students that have like severe anger issues or severe anxiety and different things like that. But whenever they find just a small thing to appreciate, even if it's just like, I love that my mom does this for me, or whatever little detail they can, it takes you out of it. Even if it's temporary, you can keep holding on to the, what can I appreciate? What can I appreciate? What can I hold on to? And I mean, the more I do it, the more I find that there's just tons to appreciate in my day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I mean, practicing gratitude in general is always good. And it's a nice little reminder. I've tried to consistently remind myself to be happy about that. I didn't get the things I didn't want. Mm-hmm. Because there's, you know, like our culture is so materialistic, and it's so built on, you know, your success is shown by what you own instead mm-hmm. of who you are. And yep. I don't know if you ever do vision boards. I know it's kind of, you know, a little woo-woo out there. But most, yeah, vision board. And I, whenever I do vision boards, you know, some people make them and it's got a picture of a house with a pool or like a sweet car or whatever, or a trip. But whenever I do, I'm looking at the ones I have in my office right now. Whenever I do them, they always say, you know, I want more time. And I want more experiences with other people. And I want to, you know, take time to cook, and I want to have time to do yoga. And like, these are the, you know, my vision is like, I can be fulfilled by the things that I do for work and make enough money where that if I want to take a day and take my kids to the beach and not go to work, like I want to do that. And mm-hmm. like that type of stuff. And just remembering that it's not about, you know, having the coolest stuff, but about appreciating the things that you do have and appreciating the things you didn't want that didn't happen, you know, like, that little, like you were saying with the students, you know, like little, one little thing like that to hold on to could be the thing that changes somebody's whole life forever. I mean, yeah. That could be the thing that keeps them here.
Yeah.
On a day they didn't want to be here anymore. And
especially because now in the modern day with students, like they have such an issue with like learning how to communicate because everything's done online. So there's like this almost anxiety through every student. Like I was teaching middle school, and when I was in middle school, like kids weren't as depressed as they are now. Like they have this just the phone, like they have a computer in their pockets. A lot of them have a nicer phone than I do, and they're 12. Mm-hmm. And they just, that's how they talk to each other. And even when kids are mean to each other, when kids were mean to each other, when I was a kid, they were mean, but they had to say it to your face. So you could also get punished. So now it's like, I can say the meanest thing I want to online, tell somebody to go kill themselves, and nobody's going to do anything about it because it's online. Who cares? It's not the same. So it's like, it's bred mm-hmm. this anxiousness and this cruelty and this depression. It's weird. It's definitely like a weird culture.
It so is. And it's part of the reason that I founded my business when I was in college. I mean, obviously I knew I wanted to be an artist and I love making paper and making books and making stuff out of paper and whatnot. But when I was 20 years old as a junior, my mom passed away on Friday the 13th, of course. And then my dorm burnt to the ground with all of my shit in it on her birthday.
Whoa.
Like 4 months after she died.
Wow.
And then it was just like, oh yeah. And, have fun, go to class. And I was, you know, three and a half years into this really specialized major. And I'd inherited a house that was 5 states away and it was instantaneous adult. And it was like, well, now what? You're a freaking grown up. And you're supposed to try to like finish going to school and deal with all this trauma and blah, 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 blah. When most people would be like, I'm done, you know, tap it out. I was like, well, my mom wouldn't want me to just give it all up. Like, what do I do now? What do I do with this? You know, like, yes, whatever I'm dealing with right now seems impossible, but I'm still waking up every day and I'm still breathing in and out. Like, what can I do with that for the rest of my life? And I started making all of these artist books where like the form and the design and the materials and how you interact with it all works together to make like one bigger concept or a bigger idea. So I started making all of these books about my mom and about dealing with trauma and how to heal and how to, you know, celebrate the things that have been part of your life, even if they're not there anymore, and to make those physical memories and how to communicate that with other people. And I started sharing these books out with people that I knew, and they would start crying while looking at these books. And they were like, wow, I didn't realize that I had all this crap to deal with. And it like shows up to me and it is bubbling to the surface from dealing with it, with these books. And I was like, holy shit. Like,
yeah.
I knew that like art therapy was a thing, but in this whole, you know, I was coming of age right when smartphones were becoming a thing and people had stopped writing in journals and stopped writing letters to each other and were starting to only communicate via email and digitally and things like that. And I just was like, you know what? That face-to-face communication that people are lacking is, I mean, that is the secret to not feeling alone in the world.
Yeah.
And as everything in the world becomes increasingly more digital, I was like, this is going to be so important to make sure that people have a concrete way to express themselves like this and to connect with other people and to help each other heal through things and, you know, to find a way to say the things that people don't know how to say anymore. And yeah. That's, I mean, that's like the foundation of my whole business, like my whole life. My goal in life is to affect positive change through connection with other people. And, you know, to be able to make something magical with my hands and give it to someone else and they share it with someone else. And all those people get to connect together and share in that energy. And I think that's awesome. So
yeah,
for real.
Awesome. Yeah.
So before we talk all day, which is like the end of all of my shows, I get to meet all these cool people who are doing all these cool things. Is there anything else that you want to share out with the world?
Sure. Just with all of the coaching stuff that I've been doing with the student debt, if you're looking to not get into student debt, you can email me. I don't know if you want to just put that in like a link or something. I could just say it too. It's masonaksamit@yahoo.com. So masonaksamit@yahoo.com. Email me. I'll help you coach. I'll coach you through how to get your bachelor's degree in a year for literally no debt. You can also get my book. It's called The 1 Year Diploma. That's online. That's on Amazon. If you type in 1 Year Diploma or my name, they'll both pop up. And then the documentary. Those are just the big things. But yeah, just any sort of appreciation of life that I can push out, just try to find what you can have gratitude over. It'll change your world.
That is awesome. I love it. We will share links to all that stuff in the show notes. And then for anyone who doesn't know, we have videos of all the podcast episodes up on YouTube, or you can listen on any of the platforms. We do have a Patreon that helps to continue funding this show. If you want to check it out, there are links to that as well. And thanks, Mason, for being on the show today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So we will be back with another episode of the Reach the Stars podcast shortly. And thanks for listening, y'all. Bye.
A single interaction has the power to change your life forever. This is a place for the stories of those moments. Stories of pursuing dreams, overcoming tragedy and failure, of coming back to life after so much of what feels like dying, of continuing on with only a vision as a map. This is the place where those moments live on. Come sit by the fire, look up at the stars, and be forever changed too.
Thank you for being with us on the Reach the Stars podcast. Our theme music is generously provided by Biocratic. You can find him on Bandcamp.com. Thank you to all of our current patrons, guests, and everyone else who helps make this dream a reality. We are so proud to be building this amazing community with all of you. If you love this podcast, please consider sharing with a friend, leaving a review on iTunes, and becoming a patron at www.patreon.com/reachthestars. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel to see the videos of these conversations. We'll see you next time. In the meantime, do something cool and tell us about it.